Hey founders, this is the SaaS Boss Show, the podcast for SaaS founders in the growth stage who want to get unstuck, build high-performing teams, and get clarity about how to build a profitable startup. Every week, I interview SaaS consultants, coaches, and experts who work with dozens of startups just like yours and share their best strategies to overcome the daily challenges of growing a profitable SaaS. My name is Natalie Luniva, and I'm a growth and leadership coach to SaaS founders, and I'm also married to a SaaS founder, and I'm so pleased that you've joined us on this conversation. Hi, everyone. Today, welcome back, Lloyd Yip. I interviewed Lloyd back in the episode number 16, where we talked about attaining product market fit and getting the first few sales using cold outreach, specifically LinkedIn. And today we'll talk about how to keep scaling and some other cool strategies that Lloyd is sharing with us today. Lloyd is a sales and marketing advisor to SaaS companies from all over the world. He specializes in helping early stage bootstrapped companies with product market fit and build systematic and predictable growth engines, which allow them to scale cost effectively and quickly. Welcome to the show, Lloyd.
Good to be here.
Let's say that we already have a few customers. Our product is built. Now we're ready to step on the gas pedal. What do we do?
So if you're selling something like super high ticket, it allows you to do things that are inherently a bit more expensive up front because you know that you're going to make it up on the back end. But if you're selling something super low ticket, then there's a couple of channels that you can't even really consider because it's just not going to be efficient. It's going to have way too high of a client acquisition cost and you're just going to burn money. So let me start off. Let's say you're selling something a little bit more expensive. It's a little bit more enterprise. You're making like recurring. You might be charging for the year up front. It might be like $10,000 or more. In that situation, continue doing more manual-based organic outreach. So things like emailing, things like LinkedIn, things like even DMing folks on Instagram. Because although this is a little bit more manual and it takes a little bit more time and you probably do have to personalize, it's worth it. Because every single time you get someone to agree on a phone call, the payoff is pretty significant. That's a very solid approach if you're selling something a little bit more high ticket. But if you're selling something really low ticket, I wouldn't necessarily discount the idea of still doing direct outreach because in the beginning, it's just really, really cheap. You don't really have much capital yet. You don't have much cash yet. The ability to do paid ads and whatnot is very, very limited just given your situation. But doing, say, like LinkedIn and email, maybe doing so at a little bit more of a scale so that you can touch more people, that's always a good thing. But then layering on other organic channels, which are very low cost, to bring people into your pipeline. Things like lifetime deals, right? If you're selling something that's relatively inexpensive, get some cash flow in by offering like a $100 or $50 lifetime deal. And that's how you kind of populate your initial couple clients, your initial dozen to a couple hundred clients, right? Also, partnership strategies as well, because that's fairly organic. You also have to do like typical biz dev. So emailing people that are selling to a similar audience base, getting them to promote your offer in their email list and vice versa. Guesting on podcasts that are selling to a very relevant audience base. These are organic things that you can do. Very inexpensive, really no need to spend money on ads at all. If you're selling something lower ticket, because those channels inherently just draw more volume, then that's something that's really, really good.
Facebook communities. When someone says organic, everyone starts thinking about SEO, search engine optimization. And that's not really what you're talking about. I like the idea of partnerships. That can be huge. But do not rely that you have a nicely designed website and that's what's going to start getting you some organic deals, right?
Yeah, so SEO is really tricky because to make it work, you have to have a lot of content set up and it just takes too long. I don't like it when founders have to spend like months and months before starting to get like consistent clientele. If you're doing partnerships and you get that set up and you have your partner sending out an email blast to their list talking about your offering, that's immediately going to get you wins. Or if you're connecting with AppSumo or many of the numerous affiliate or lifetime deal sites, that's going to get you clients like immediately. But SEO takes like forever to build up. And to make it work, you got to have good content. And content creation takes like forever. Let's put it this way. SEO is not the 80-20 rule. It does not satisfy the 80-20 rule in the beginning.
So I want to make sure we're not implying that you should not produce any content. You should, but it just takes time, right? And
yeah,
while so you're doing that, you can also work on some things that can start bringing immediate results. And partnership sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, so create content. Just don't expect that it's going to be the biggest reason why you're acquiring clients in the early days. The only way that it's going to be generating like significant traction for you in the early days is posting content on really targeted communities. So that's actually something that I recommend a lot of people do. So if they're part of Slack communities, which are specifically around a topic and serves an audience that you can serve yourself with your offering, then potentially posting really helpful content there, which somehow leads back to your offering, that could work because you're getting it immediately in front of the right people, right? Your website, if you're just posting content on your website, in the beginning, you have no website traffic anyways. So no one's really going to be converting. But if you hijack, say, a Slack community, you post it there, you'll get immediate engagement and immediate conversion. Or a Facebook group community. So for me, I sell the SaaS, obviously. So there's a million SaaS communities on Facebook with thousands and thousands of founders. I post my content there and I'll get immediate conversion there, right? So if you're going to be sharing content, by all means, put it on your website because you think it's going to be long-term beneficial for your SEO. But if you're looking for immediate conversion using content, your website's not going to be where it's generating immediate conversion.
I like the idea of Facebook groups or other communities because some founders think that I should be posting on my Facebook page, which that's not the same. If you don't have any likes, no one's going to see that content that you're posting. If you can post it with like minimum amount of time that you put into it on your page, sure, please do. If you can set up cross-posting, absolutely. But then if you have 100 people liking your page, zero is going to see that.
Yeah. And even if you have thousands of people who've liked your Facebook page, it doesn't matter because Facebook's algorithm doesn't care about Facebook pages anymore. So where the Facebook algorithm right now is actually pushing most people to is Facebook groups. Because it's a way more natural way of communication. Facebook is pretty much pumping everyone into communities. Like you rarely even see Facebook page posts on your wall anymore, on your feed. It's very rare. So I wouldn't even really have people waste time on Facebook pages too much. The extent at which I use my Facebook page is like I just set it up more so that when I'm doing paid acquisition, I can do it through my Facebook page because you can't do paid acquisition through a Facebook group.
Yep. And so, through your personal profile. So that's why.
Yeah, and my personal profile as well. Like, so I set up my Facebook personal profile and make it so that my story is told there very clearly. My Facebook group, and I have a community that I run myself. And then my Facebook page is, just more for paid acquisition.
Alrighty, so what are the next steps? We're trying to get past the 10K MRR, more like towards like 20, 30, 40K MRR. What are our next steps?
So there's two things that really have to happen for you to hit that next threshold. So the first thing is that you got to make sure you're actually converting well at the bottom of the funnel. Because we were alluding to this in the beginning, but if you're generating like a crazy amount of leads every week, but none of them are closing, then you have a massive gap there. So if you're selling high ticket, you really got to make sure that your bottom of the funnel sales process is tight. Meaning, do you understand the entire sales call process? Do you have a discovery call pitch that you're consistently doing? Do you understand how to articulate your value over a sales call? Do you have an effective demo? Are your sales skills good? I mean, in the beginning, the assumption is that you don't have a sales team or a salesperson. Maybe you have a co-founder who's a bit more business oriented. But if you're not that person, if you're the engineer, then you're going to have to just suck it up and learn how to sell yourself. Do you know how to sell? Do you know how to handle negotiations and objection handling? Do you know how to create urgency? Do you know how to tailor your demo so that it's relevant to whoever you're speaking with? Because frankly, a lot of people see a lot of demos and they pretty much fall asleep halfway through the demo because it's not interesting. If that's happening to you because you're not telling your story right, that's not good. We don't get to create more leads until we solve that, right? And the beautiful thing is, because we have at least the version one of a lead generation engine organically, which is like very low cost, then we'll have enough attempts to get our sales playbook better. But yeah, before we create the second generation or the second version of our lead generation system, which does even more volume into our pipeline, we got to really take that initial engine and use those leads to really refine the way in which you're closing deals.
So how can we make sure that our demos are done effectively, and where do we learn to sell better on demos?
Yeah. So, I mean, that by itself could be a podcast episode, but if I was to really simplify it into its most constituent parts, the first thing is that if you don't discover well, your demo's not going to perform. Don't even go in thinking, oh, I'm just going to sell and I'm going to do it really, really well. Think about, okay, I'm on a call with someone who has a lot of problems. Let me actually just take the time to really understand what their problems are first before I pitch them anything. Let them feel heard. Make sure that you actually understand if they're even a good fit. Understand their dreams, their goals, their desires. And all of that will then allow you to have a much more tailored demo. Like, a mistake that people make all the time is that they're constantly just talking and talking and talking, and they're just showing product. And that's pretty much the entire conversation. A good demo is A, going to have a very conversational feel to it. Meaning, if you're talking, you're pretty much never talking for more than 3 or 4 minutes straight. There's always going to be input from your client. The second thing is for sure that when you are, you know, sharing your feature set, it's only going to be the feature set that is likely to be relevant to the client. So let's say you have 10 different things that you could technically sell. In reality, 7 of those features might not be relevant to your customers. So that's why the discovery is important. You figure out what are the couple of things that really, really matter to them, and then you just demo the features that are relevant. And the other stuff that you technically could talk about, maybe you just leave out because you know that it wouldn't be as interesting or relevant to their situation. So the last thing I would say is, like, really focus on the benefits, because especially with more tech-focused founders, they just love what they built so much that they want to get into all the nitty-gritty, the integrations, the APIs, the whatever. It's like people really couldn't care less. They just want to understand, will your offering get them from point A to point B? Once again, like, if you discover what point A is and what point B is, it's going to make it easier for you, but your specs and your feature set, they're just a means to an end. What's the end? Like, what's the so what? People need to talk about the so what way more than about the features and the product itself.
Right. So talk about the benefits and not features. And it is so funny when I talk to founders and I ask them about their software or the tool that they've built. Every single time they start talking about with this super tacky talk, and they share all the information about AI, API, and stuff like this, which, I mean, tell me what your tool is doing. Do not tell me how it's doing that, because I don't care, right?
Yeah, no one cares. So if anyone's listening to this and you feel like this is a very harsh message, it is what it is. No one cares. So talk about it in a way which people will care. Show them how you're going to transform their lives and their business.
And the same thing on your websites, because I often visit the websites of SaaS tools, and then what do you see there most probably? It's not the benefit, but it's explanation of what tool is doing, which often is hard to understand even. So talk about, I've heard about this exercise where you ask, so what? So when you ask, so what, enough times, then maybe you'll come to the final message that's going to be easily understandable to people that come on your website.
Exactly. So the demo is a huge part of it. I would say it's a massive, massive part of having a playbook which actually converts. And if you can get your playbook to be converting at like 30 to 40% win rate on cold traffic or cold leads, that's pretty solid. a lot of people in the beginning, they're working mostly with like referrals or word of mouth and whatnot. They might be closing 80% or 70%. Like, yeah, that's expected. Warm leads are always going to close more, but cold leads, if you can be closing those at 30 to 40%, that's pretty solid. So yeah, that's what I would be doing for something a bit more high ticket. You got to really figure out your closing ratios there. And if you're selling something a little bit lower ticket, it's a bit more tricky because you have to be doing your sales in a little bit more of a self-serve at scale manner. Let's say you're doing like free trials, right? Like, do you have a solid free trial to paid trial conversion, or a solid free trial to like paid user conversion? Or do you have like an upsell engine, which is consistently getting people from just like a forever paid free plan to like eventually a paid plan? So those are the things that you're looking at instead from a metrics perspective. And there's like a whole host of things that you can do there, which will allow you to be converting more people at a higher package rate or a higher tier. So yeah, once you get that nailed down and you are predictably able to convert a certain number of leads into a paid plan, then you can justify getting more leads into the pipeline.
What are some things that you didn't have a chance to talk about or I have not asked you?
I'd say in general, just take things step by step, because it's very easy to get overwhelmed when you're scaling. And there's so many things that you can do in theory that it's like, whoa, I'm super intimidated by all the work that's on my horizon. But really, when you begin a new company, first, talk to customers or talk to prospects and make sure that you're solving a real problem. And then once you know you're solving a real problem, build something that can solve it and give it to people to see if it's actually solving the problem. And then once you know it's actually solving people's problems, generate some more business organically and don't go crazy. Just choose like two or three channels at most. Don't try to do seven or eight different things to find clients. Just focus your energy on the two or three things that work. For me, it was LinkedIn and Facebook. For you, it might be lifetime deals and partnerships. Pick the one or two that works and focus your energy on those one or two things, because it's going to make it simpler for you. And then once you have a certain amount of leads coming in, just like really focus on making sure that those leads are converting. And that's all you need to worry about. So at any given point, you're really only focusing on one or two things. And that's how you keep your business simple, right? You're never trying to, oh, I'm trying to improve my product and I'm trying to hire a sales team and I'm trying to improve my closing process and I'm trying to do like four other things at the same time. That's when things get impossible for a founder. Just one or two things at any given point and just follow the roadmap. And then if you do that, you'll be okay. Iterative growth.
Awesome.
Patience and iterative growth. At this point, if you're doing all of these things, there's no reason why you wouldn't be at like $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 MRR. And then up from there, it just really does depend on the type of company that you're building. Are you building something higher ticket? Are you building something lower ticket? And that really does dictate, oh, do I need to invest more money into like actually a sales team, which a higher ticket offering makes a lot of sense. Like, it's a bit more of a sales focused organization, or do you hire a marketing team because you need to do like conversion rate optimization. You got to figure out like how to make your landing pages really, really good. You got to start doing SEO. You got to start doing more content. Your approach splits depending on the pricing of your offering. That's kind of where things splinter off.
And then once we have those things dialed up and we know our conversion numbers are good, then we can pour some more gas and do some pay-per-click, right?
Yeah, exactly. Because at some point you're going to realize that your client acquisition costs are a certain amount and that your margins are certain amounts. When all of those things are pretty much figured out, you can just start doing some more paid campaigns because you understand the numbers that you need to aim towards. But yeah, you generally don't do that in the beginning because it's too risky. You don't have the capital. You don't know what your metrics really are. You don't know what your retention is yet. Really hard to justify spending that money in the beginning. I mean, unless you're not bootstrapped. Unless, if you have a lot of money in the bank, if you have funding, then you get a bit more leeway to make those decisions. But still, it's always going to be riskier to do that stuff before you've validated certain metrics in the past. So yeah.
Can you share with us some sort of resources, like any books that were really impactful?
My favorite sales book ever is The Challenger Sale, and it's all about selling via education. And for me, especially because I'm a consultant, it is important that before I even bring anyone on, that I educate them as much as I can, because that creates credibility. I used to sell MarTech, and before I would even talk about my product at all, I would often like go into just their strategy, and I would audit what they were doing with their demand gen, and I would give them recommendations on how they could fix things. And then the recommendations that I would give generally would tie into the benefits and the feature set of the offering of our SaaS. So it made a lot of sense. It transitioned very fluidly. But even when I was selling SaaS, I was always making sure I was educating as much as I was pitching. And when people see that you're really trying to add value, they believe you way more, and they're way more open to actually evaluating what your offering is. So that's always a perspective that I've had, and it stayed with me to this day. So anyone who wants to learn a bit more about how to make that approach work for you, The Challenger Sale is like a very good book.
Where can our listeners find you, and what it is that you help founders with?
So I help my founders, whether they be SaaS companies or service-based companies, B2B typically, I help them pretty much build a process which enables them to get product market fit, help them build engines and repeatable systems which allow them to make lead generation easy. And then I also help them implement sales playbooks which enable them to convert. And then this is the starting place for long-term sustainable scaling. And when we start hitting that 25, 35K per month mark, there's even additional things that we can do so that you get to that 500K, that $1 million ARR mark. So those are pretty much the areas in which I help my clients out with. If you want to find me, my website's lwyconsulting.com. I also have like a few free giveaways and free trainings that I can give you the URL of.
Please do.
And then whoever's in your, you know, listening to this via Stitcher or Player FM or whatnot, they can just click into that and they can immediately start checking out additional content. So I'll leave that in the show notes, and anyone who wants to check it out, they can.
Awesome.
I enjoyed my time here today.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, Lloyd.
Cheers.
And that's it for this episode. For those tech founders who have a remote team, I have a question. Do you find yourself that it's much faster for you to do things by yourself than waste all of that mental energy delegating tasks to someone? And so you either don't hire anyone, or if you already have a remote team, you're guilty of doing those tasks by yourself, because there's just so much energy goes into delegating the tasks and then just managing people. Are you able to take a few days off and not be worried that your servers will go down or your support is going to blow up? What if you could work on more strategic, important things and let your team fix the bugs? If you only started building your team in the last couple of years, I guarantee that you are making lots of mistakes that hinder your growth without even realizing that. Oftentimes, you, the founder, may end up being the bottleneck to your team's success. That is definitely hard to swallow, but it's true. But also look on the bright side, this is also the easiest problem for you to fix, because you are in control of how to fix it. I'll be launching soon a program that will help tech founders improve your team performance, and as a result, remove the roadblocks to scaling your SaaS just by improving your operations and team dynamic. This is really the shortcut. To be notified when it's live, go to my website, natalieluniva.com/team. natalieluniva.com/team.